Good morning. This is Les Harms, speaking on behalf of the Adams County Historical Society, welcoming you to another segment of Adams County History. With COVID-19 still affecting millions of Americans, more than 2 years after the latest pandemic to strike this nation, today's Moments in Time is going to go back in history to tell some of the earlier pandemics. Remember, until the late 1880s, there was no hospital of any sort in Adams County. The doctors would treat patients either in their office or in the patient's home. Also, no vaccines, no antibiotics were available, so childhood diseases were a frightening specter on the horizon, always feared. Historians of the future, reading the police records of the 1900s through the 1930s, may be puzzled to know what placarding duties were. The monthly year-end reports of the police department always told how many placarding calls have been made. Those historians will have no way of knowing that in the days before vaccines, placarding was a means of controlling childhood diseases. As soon as winter came, mothers could expect their youngsters to bring home any assortment of diseases, any one of which could be serious. There was measles, several varieties. There was mumps, whooping cough, chicken pox, diphtheria, scarlet fever, the most common ones. Not only did the older children come down with the ailments, they also passed those diseases along to their younger school-age siblings. And the only way known at that time of controlling them appeared to be quinine, quarantine, or isolation. As soon as a city physician learned, usually from a school nurse, that a household harbored a particular disease, he would send a police car out to placard the disease, the house. Each disease in a different colored card. The police car would pull up in front of the house. A policeman would take a small poster size, 9 by 12 maybe, and nail it to the front door. The black letters on the sign would tell the world that within this house was a case of contagious disease. Measles, the yellow sign would say, or chicken pox. Red was scarlet fever. The yellow cards were warning ones, meaning that the disease was with a bad one, but not critical. All the children in the family could not go to school. They could not expose their classmates. Their dad, the wage earner, could go on about his duties. The families could not get books from the library. They could not vote, this type of thing. The red signs were for quarantine, absolutely, and they meant business. In fact, the red placard consigned the family to a condition much like a biblical leper. If anyone in the family broke the quarantine, the police department went into action right away. With the posting of the sign, the whole family was in limbo for the duration of the disease. Other children in the family could not go to school. Dad could not go to work. If it was a large family, and the children all came down with the disease, it meant the youngsters would miss several months of school each winter. The situation with Dad, however, was usually different. Dad would usually move out of the house so that he would continue to go to work each day. He would rent a room, move in with the neighbors, maybe a relative, and the evening would go back to his own home, knock on the window, get a glimpse of the family through the glass. Mother and the children were huddled within the house, having to have groceries and other necessities delivered and left on the back step. Nobody could go out of the house as long as that red placard was on the front door. Life inside that house, remember, folks, this was pre-TV, pre-radio, was pretty grim. For unless there was a telephone, the only means of communication with the outside world was big messages printed on tablet paper held up to the front window for a passerby to read. Occasionally, a maiden aunt or maybe a hired girl who had previously had the disease would come in to help. Judged by today's pharmaceutical standards, the medicines used during that period from 1900 until maybe the 1940s, were peculiar. Shots or injections were unknown. Medicines were in pill or capsule form. Poultices or plasters helped with some ailments. A mustard plaster, for instance, consisted of powdered mustard put on a loose cloth sack, which had been steaming in hot water, wrung out, and then applied to the ailing part. It helped bring boils or skin eruptions to a head, cured the sore throat or lung congestions. Sore throats were painted or swabbed with burning, foul-tasting medicine, the procedure that produced a gagging effect. Warmed oil was used for earaches. Hot water bottles were commonly used remedies. For measles or chickenpox, applications of bicarbonate of soda were used to control the itching. And in some cases, the child was put in a bathtub to soak in baking soda and water. Brown flour was used for diaper rash. Aspirin was an all-inclusive remedy to reduce the fever or assuage pain. Aspirin was an all-inclusive remedy. Now, and it did not come into widespread use until the 1920s. Among commonly used medicines were quinine, camphor, alum, muriatic, and carbolic acids, silver nitrate, vitamins, antihistamines, all were entirely unknown. When the disease was over, the police department would remove the sign from the front door. The family then had to fumigate the house, a long, dreary, smelly process. Now, the diseases of the winter were usually ordinary childhood diseases. The ailments of summer were more likely to be intestinal disorders. But from 1900 onward, there were physicians who made house calls and drugstores that compounded the prescriptions to treat the ailing. It was a far more assuring existence than the generation before, when the prairie mothers had to make their own diagnosis, gather their own herbs, and simmer their own remedies. The children who grew up during the placarding were fully cognizant of the wonders of castor oil, liniment, analgesic balm, mustard plasters, and Uncle Fred's cigar smoke blown into the ear to calm a throbbing earache. Well, pioneer life may be romantic to look upon on a TV story, but it was a dreary round of poverty, grinding toil, and frequent illness. Often there were no doctors to be had, or they were long miles away. Those available were often lacking in medical education. Many times, people were forced to make do by doctoring themselves with what they had on hand. If a doctor was called in, it was usually after all the home remedies had failed, and many times that was too late. Without modern drugs and surgical techniques, doctor could do little except to hold on with their home remedies. Goose grease was a primary ingredient of many home remedies. It was smeared on the hands and the faces to prevent chapping. It was combined with turpentine or kerosene to be rubbed on the chest for colds and applied to burns and blisters. One Adams County lady remembers that her mother used goose grease because it was greasier than lard. Her mother would combine goose grease and turpentine together and then to rub that on the chest to loosen congestion. She also remembers her mother making a cold medicine by combining raw onions, lots of sugar, and a few drops of turpentine. Place that on the back of the cook stove and let it set until it turned into a syrup. That was good for coughs and for colds. Then, like now, there seemed to be more remedies than there were miseries of colds. There was a firm belief that the stronger the remedy, the better. Mustard plasters, you were strong enough to take off the skin sometimes and substitute a new pain for the original. Well, as one person said in Adams County, her husband had broke a rib, and he thought the mustard plaster would help relieve the pain. The heat felt so good, they left the plaster on too long, and when they took it off, the skin came with it. One doctor, onion poultices, were also remembered by an Adams County lady. She told about frying onions in a small amount of lard, spread that between claws, lay it on the chest while it's hot, and cover it up, leave it until cold, and repeat it. She remembers how those onions would smell the house up. We put it up a lot. She also remembers her father would make a cough syrup. He would take a bottle of whiskey, add rock candy and some kind of oil and shake it up. And we would take a couple of spoonfuls whenever we had a cough. If a child was not feeling well, the mothers would remark, all he needs is a good physic. Those were synonymous with medicine. Many physics were made of. Well, as we go ahead, another remedy was that of the skin of an egg. Break the egg, remove the skin, place on the splinter the boil, and leave it on until it's dry, and then repeat. A remedy used by another lady was called, as we called, for burns. And she said, when I was very small, I was badly burned. My parents feared I might die. We were on a wagon train going to Arkansas. No doctor was available. So my mother found some cattails, pulled off the fuzz, mixed it with castor oil, found it, and bound it to the burn. It healed, but I had a scar for many years. Well, what were some of those home remedies that were popular? There was probably almost as many remedies as there were mothers. For example, for arthritis, you would make up a poultice of fresh cow manure, tea made from alfalfa, and then, or you could drink rhubarb juice mixed with whiskey. How about if you had a stomachache? Well, you could drink liniment diluted with sugar and water, and then drink peppermint tea. Well, what about chest congestion? Onion plasters, mustard plasters. Make a strong tea by boiling pine needles and eat onion gruel. What about the colic? Mix whiskey with milk. What about cramps? Drink garlic tea. What about an earache? Wrapping hot ashes in a wet cloth and hold it next to your ear. What about a fever? Drink tea. What about a sore throat? Wrap a cloth containing fried or baked onions, mustard plasters, rub lard or goose grease, and mix it with turpentine or kerosene on the throat, and then gargle with salt water. What about a toothache? Hold the whiskey or turpentine on the tooth. Put ashes on a rag. Dampen it with hot water and sleep with a head on it. Well, some of these remedies undoubtedly worked. Some were useless, and some may have been harmful. The sight or the smell of some of these remedies must have been enough to work a miraculous recovery even on a really sick child. The primary ingredient in most remedies was tender, loving care. In the days when doctors knew little more than the rest of the people, remedies were an important factor in a family's health. Those remedies themselves stand as a treatment to the ingenuity of our ancestors. This Moment in Time has been a presentation of the Adams County Historical Society. Again, we invite you to listen, to learn, and to please consider joining our society. You can also visit our website at www.adamshistory.org. And so, this is Les Harms telling you, please tune in on the second and the fourth Friday of each month. Thank you for listening.